The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the first Guardian Sustainable Business podcast. I'm Alok Jha and we'll be looking at the issue of so-called planetary boundaries, a model which has been developed by scientists to explain the idea the Earth has limits. This means limits to things like how much nitrogen-based fertilizer we can release into the water, how much ozone depletion we can safely handle, and a limit to the extent we should allow climate change before it becomes dangerous. If these limits are breached, our planet could be changed irreversibly. Let's start with a brief rundown of what these planetary boundaries actually are. Here's The Guardian's environment editor, John Vidal.
This started off as an academic model, really trying to chart what were the limits of the Earth. And they came up with 9 different areas, which they suggested that if mankind crossed, if we crossed these, then we risked abrupt and irreversible environmental change. Now, of the 9, 2, they reckoned, are probably already crossed, one of which is climate change, and the other which is biodiversity or the wealth of nature. This suggests that the Earth has physical boundaries. If we go over them, we face ruin, and that we're entering a whole new epoch, which is called the Anthropocene, which is basically the man, the world made by man, so that man is now the greatest agent of change. It's a fantastically useful model because for the first time, it really allows people to see the world as one, with all of these different areas making up one thing, and that each and any one of them is a limit which we cannot go across. So what it means is businesses, governments, NGOs, individuals can all understand that the world is a whole.
The Guardian's environment editor, John Vidal. So this is a model that aims to envisage the Earth as a living, breathing system. But how useful is it to human society? To debate how businesses around the world can use the planetary boundaries model to make themselves more sustainable, I'm joined in the studio by a team of experts. Kate Raworth is a senior researcher at Oxfam. On the line from Davos in Switzerland is Johan Rockström from the Stockholm Resilience Centre. He was instrumental in the development of the planetary boundaries theory. And on the line from Rotterdam is Gail Whiteman, a professor in business society management at the Erasmus University and a professor in residence at the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. Welcome to everyone. Johan, can you just explain to us what the main use for the planetary boundaries model is? I mean, what state are we in with some of these things?
Well, the oranges, one should recognize that the planetary boundary analysis is that we are finding so much evidence that we're hitting the ceiling of the biophysical capacity of planet Earth to stay in its current stable state, which is the state that can support our modern world. So it provides humanity, from businesses to governments to society at large, with what we've called a safe operating space for the Earth system processes, from the climate system to biodiversity, within which we can avoid very, you know, for society, unwanted, potentially catastrophic, abrupt changes, many of them being reversible. So it's a kind of a scientific-based framework to provide the playing field within which we can have prosperity, innovation, and growth. And it's based on the best and updated integrated science, recognizing, which is really critical, that over the past 30 years, we built up a knowledge base understanding that the Earth system is a self-regulating, biophysical, and hardwired system, which has had many different equilibria and stable states over its, you know, billion years of existence. But over the past 10,000 years, it stayed very stable in a state that has enabled the modern world as we know it.
So give us a brief summary of how well we're doing with some of the boundaries.
We've identified, and nobody's come up with any good argument for going beyond the 9 boundaries that we have identified. And of course, for the most obvious one, climate change, the science is clear that we have transgressed the safe boundary for concentration of greenhouse gases, and we're starting to see abrupt changes in the Arctic. So there we are already in the danger zone. For biodiversity, there's ample evidence today that we're pushing the loss of biodiversity so far. So we're starting to see collapse in ecosystems, from lakes to savannas to critical temperate forest systems, because we're breaking down the food web in our ecosystems. And then finally, for eutrophication, for overload of nitrogen and phosphorus, we're also seeing, you know, eutrophication-induced tipping points, particularly in big lake systems, but also coastal regions. For the rest of the boundaries on water, land, air pollution, but also ocean acidification and aerosol loading and chemicals, we are approaching the ceiling, but we still have some maneuvering room. But science, I should emphasize, is critically revisiting this all the time. We have a recent analysis showing that for phosphorus, which we thought we were in a safe zone, that we are approaching already there a danger zone.
Gail, Johan mentioned there several boundaries that are breached or near breached. What can we do about all of this in reality?
Well, I think the first thing that we are trying to do at the World Business Council for Sustainable Development is to use the Planetary's Boundaries Framework to strategically look at our work programs, both as an organization of CEO-led member companies and of individual sector projects, to say this is the dashboard for the planet. So we know we're off kilter on at least three. And we have to take a look at what we're going to do with those. Obviously, many of our member firms and our organization itself has been actively working on climate change, and we've been doing a lot of, I think, interesting things in that space. We also have developed some tools on biodiversity loss to try and take a look at the valuation of biodiversity and helping firms understand their footprint. In terms of nitrogen and phosphorus, I think that the Planetary Boundaries Framework, it gives us a bit of a wake-up call to say, what actually are we all doing on nitrogen and phosphorus? Now, certainly some of our member companies are actively working on nitrogen issues in terms of agriculture or phosphorus, but we haven't in the past brought those issues up into our work plan at the WBCSD. So to begin with, I think for us, it's a strategic exercise of seeing where we should be focusing our efforts. The second insight, though, is that this is a global framework, and it's meaningful in terms of showing executives, MBA students, and boards of directors that these are what is important for the planet. But we have to disaggregate these into actionable targets for business, and that's the process that we are in right now. We are working with Stockholm Resilience Center, so Johan's group and a number of international scientists, to disaggregate the nine boundary frameworks and make those into actionable targets for business and industry sectors.
Kate, let me come to you about this. These boundaries talk about the Earth as a giant functioning sort of ecosystem, which it is, of course. Is it surely not too big a problem for individual businesses to deal with? I mean, we heard there from Gail about individual action plans, but what can a business do to really sort out such a big problem?
Well, first, I think it's fantastic to have one simple picture that shows us the global scale of this problem. And we all need to educate ourselves about the functioning of the planet. We're all learning about these ecosystems and their interaction. When we want to take that from the global scale and go down to the individual business, I imagine if I, in a company, I would take my company's product and put it in the middle of that diagram and ask myself, looking at my product, how it's made, how it operates through the supply chains, how I employ people, how I sell it, and how I recycle the products, which of these nine boundaries is my product having most impact on? Where have we made progress over the last 10 years? What can we be proud of that we've already done? But where can we further make more progress? And I think a company could use it in a really visual and exciting way to see itself making progress on those critical boundaries that particular product line and it's in its whole supply chain is putting pressure on. So one company can say, I want my products to be part of living in this safe operating space. I want to be proud of the progress I'm making and show how I'm moving into that space.
So it's a sort of measure of progress against an optimistic or an aspirational future.
Yeah, optimistic or aspiration. I think it's actually incredibly important that we have this. The 21st century is actually quite an overwhelming thing to look forward into. We're going to be over 9 billion people. We've already pushed our planet over at least three of these boundaries, and yet billions of people still live without the most basic resources they need for food, for water, electricity, transport. We really have a big challenge ahead of us, and we need a compass for this century. I think the Planetary Boundaries Framework gives us the beginning of a compass. It's a positive vision of a place we do want to be, and that's very important to inspire people towards a positive movement rather than feeling overwhelmed by the complexity of it all.
Gail, can I just ask you briefly, are you optimistic that that businesses can sort of rise to these challenges with these targets that you're talking about?
I am extremely optimistic about this. In fact, this is one of the things that gives me optimism in general, because business is definitely the engine of change. And if their efforts are not focused on dealing with the nine boundaries and not just the three that are overshot, but let's look at all nine, then I think we're not going to get enough change, because we can see from an international perspective that governments enter into deadlocks very quickly in terms of negotiations. But I think if business does not embed this into their strategy, then I think we lose a lot of hope.
Now, the environmental challenge ahead of us is clearly huge. And one of the criticisms of the planetary boundaries model is that it deals with the Earth on a global level and not a regional one. I mean, for example, in Europe, there seems to be plenty of fresh water, but Africa is very water stressed. Johan, how do you react to criticism like that about the regionality and the problems around the model you've created?
Yeah, I mean, there's two answers to that. The first answer is, and Gail already hinted at that, which is the big game change with regard to when we launched the Modern Thinking on Sustainable Development in 1992 and today is that now we've entered the fully interconnected, globalized phase of environment and development. So while we could 20 years back talk of nations or sectors reducing environmental impacts and basically creating islands of sustainability in a kind of an ocean of both ignorance and environmental problems, that's not possible today. If you chop down the forests in Borneo or Amazon, the interconnectedness across both climate, land, and ocean systems is so tightly coupled because we've saturated the pressure so much that you'll see feedbacks hitting back all the way to the European North American economy. So, for example, we're starting to see signs now that the accelerated Arctic melt creates impacts through changes in the jet stream, which affects winter climates in the northern European region, but also affecting heat waves in Europe. So the interconnectedness means that we today need a global framework. So for the first time, we can say that global sustainability is a prerequisite for poverty alleviation and well-being at the local scale. So that's one conclusion. The second one is that right as we speak, science is working. We're working right now to couple the global definitions of boundaries with regional to local definitions. So we see the possibilities of scaling down. To give you one example, so we have a global freshwater boundary of how much freshwater we can allow ourselves to consume at the global scale, because the global hydrological cycle is interconnected from the Amazon to the Southeast Asian monsoon. But then we're also then taking that down to the river basin scale to say how much water can you take out in each river system in the world before you start seeing abrupt changes. So you can actually twin a global boundary with a regional indicator. But I should say, we did not do that at the starting point because it was never meant to be, you know, ready for policy or ready for operationalization. The enthusiasm within business and civil society that's triggered us to take this next step.
Kate, you've often talked about the traditional model of economic growth and how that should be challenged. So that if there are limits to the Earth systems, then perhaps there should be limits to economic growth as well. Can you just explain that a little bit?
So I studied economics years ago and was struck by the idea that economic growth is the goal of what economies should be aimed at was just taken as an implicit assumption. We never really discussed it. And also, when you study economics and the economic framework that we use day to day in the media and politics is entirely built around the monetary economy. And then issues like environmental degradation are seen as externalities. Well, we'll come to those later and we'll internalize them somehow around the system. And issues like, indeed, social inequality and deprivation, again, they're unfortunate byproducts of pursuing GDP growth, and we'll deal with those later. We need to turn around the way we're thinking about economic development. And I'm excited by the idea of starting with the fundamentals that we care about. If you want to be an economist, put aside economics for a moment. Start by understanding the planet and how it functions. Understand its systems and the limits of stress that we can put on it. Start by understanding humanity's needs and what people need to meet their human rights. And then you say, your job as an economist is to bring us into the space, which means every human being has the resources they need to meet their human rights, but that we do this collectively within the means of our planet's 9 planetary boundaries. And when you start with the fundamentals and then ask what kind of economic development would take us there, people get excited because it opens up questions of, does this mean a growth economy or does it mean a post-growth economy? It's not automatically obvious.
Now, is that something that you think international governments will take seriously as a sort of goal? Because, as you say, economic growth has been the paradigm. That's the traditional thing. How difficult is it to shift these economists from their position?
Well, in terms of governments, I mean, the process that's just starting up to develop sustainable development goals through the United Nations is an ideal opportunity to do just this. It's a goal-orientated objective. So it's saying, where should we be headed? What should the compass for our progress be? How should we How should we judge the way we're going? That's an opportunity to say, let's put environmental goals in place, and nine planetary boundaries provides a really strong framework for doing that. Let's put social boundaries in place in terms of ensuring everybody can meet their human rights. If we could have these two things, these would be the goals for development, and the economy is a tool to get us there. We don't allow ourselves to be enslaved by economic growth and then see the fallout all around us.
So economic goals for a purpose rather than for its own ends.
Exactly.
Gail, is it realistic though to ask businesses to reduce their own growth prospects for the sake of the environment?
I think we have to take a step back and take a look at the whole financial system. So I think that to ask a company specifically to do that is something, you know, certainly the shareholders or the stakeholders can ask, but it's difficult if they're within the ongoing financial system of short-term capitalism that we have. So
and
I think the issue
that
is
wasn't in the best interest of the company if that was the case, if you were asking them to reduce their forecasts and their output.
Well, it depends on how long a horizon you can talk to a company, and that will depend on the vision that they have and the operating space they have within their sort of key stakeholder group. You know, you do see definitely companies that are innovating for bio-based products that have a 30-year time horizon and that have different financial objectives in terms of payback than they would if they were just business as usual. So we are certainly seeing shifts in that. We're seeing shifts in senior executives also saying that they think the model of short-term capitalism is broken. But by no means is that a unanimous voice at this stage. I think the issue is about risk, though, and I think that all of the boundaries pose business risks as well as risks to society. So how we are also grabbing attention is to try and talk to the decision makers, but in terms of this is a risk issue for your supply chain. This is a risk issue for extreme weather events and so on. And I think that has resonance.
So it certainly is a challenge from what you've both said. Johan, can I come back to you? Do you ever in your darker moments think this is all a bit too idealistic, given the challenges you've outlined?
No, I tend to agree with Gail that we're starting to see a starting point of a shift in thinking, particularly when it comes to entrepreneurs and big corporations. I mean, remember that we have lived for at least 50 years within a paradigm which is based on the belief that we have growth without limits. And even without the planet boundary framework and even without Earth system science, we're starting to see that the planet is sending invoices back. It's becoming costly for the economy to operate in that way, both in terms of resource scarcity, but also in terms of the worst drought ever recorded in Texas, causing even an impact on U.S. GDP last year. And then we moved into an era of limits to growth, and science was really putting warning signs, and we created this dichotomy between environment against development. And what we're seeing the last 5-10 years is this very constructive new paradigm of not thinking of growth without limits, not thinking about limits to growth, but rather a new path, which is growth within limits, simply setting out that playing ground and within that creating business models, creating innovation systems that are resource efficient, circular economic, where you can compete on a market by being smart and meeting a new demand. I mean, there's no doubt that the next generation will not accept the kind of linear incremental thinking we've had so far. So of course, there are darker moments because we're starting to see that we're pushing the system too far. There's a risk of irreversibilities here, catastrophic ones. But on the other hand, I think there's so much talking in favor of combining science and business and policy in this area.
So the planetary boundaries model is a good way to imagine the Earth as a living and breathing system. But the main environmental concern that we should all be worried about is to promote a workable action plan that people can carry out. One of the groups that have criticized the model a bit is the Breakthrough Institute. Here's that group's Linus Blomqvist.
Our objective, just like the advocates of a planetary boundaries model, is to lessen the impact of human activities for businesses and other organizations. But the reason why we disagree with some of the aspects of planetary boundaries is that we simply think that is not actually going to get us in the right direction. That's not going to help us. If it kind of gets stuck into a global scale framework that is actually not going to be implemented for many reasons, there's really no international institution or framework that can implement any of this. So therefore, we think that focusing on the planetary boundaries as such, especially for the more local and regional systems, could actually be a waste of time and can actually be a way through which we lose important time to take positive actions.
So that was Linus Blomqvist of the Breakthrough Institute, who was arguing that maybe it's just confusing things to add a whole load of new targets into the mix when we can't actually agree even on some of the things like climate change. So this is a question for all of you here. Is this just too much? Johan, is it just confusing to have all these extra things to go for when in fact it might just pause progress instead of actually making us go and do things?
I would argue exactly on the contrary. I can tell you that one of the release factors, I believe, in the discussions, even the climate negotiations, is to recognize that climate change is but one among many challenges that matter for economic growth in the world. And that, in fact, climate change is probably the easier one to solve, because there we have perfect substitution between fossil energy sources and renewable energy sources. And I find that there's a lot of recognition among politicians and business leaders when one started talking of the Earth system as an integrated system that supports economic growth. And moreover, you know, it's quite recently we entered the globalized phase of the economy. Today we understand it. It's quite recently we entered the globalized phase of communications. Today we understand it. So now we've entered the globalized phase of the environment, and we need planetary stewardship because things need to add up. It's not that we're going to act at the planetary scale, but we need things to add up. And that's not a surprising step to take, because remember that one of the nine boundaries we actually have solved at the planetary scale, which is by signing the Montreal Protocol and navigating ourselves free from depleting the ozone, the stratospheric ozone holes.
Kate, how about you? Do you think that there's an excuse that politicians and others can use, that these boundaries are just an example of just another talking shop?
I think it's incredibly important that we understand the planet that we live on. It gives us life, it gives us everything. Since the 14th century, we've been trying to understand the human body, how high the temperature can rise until you have a seizure, how fast the heart can beat, how long you can go without water. It's really extraordinary that it's only now that a group of scientists, Johan and his colleagues, are asking the same question about the planet. How much pressure can we put on this planet that gives us everything? The idea that it's too complicated, I think, is just not right. Politicians deal every day with data on unemployment, but they also have to look out for inflation, for interest rates, for trade balances, government debt. So we're used to dealing with multiple indicators and having to balance lots of complex interacting systems. The trouble is economics developed without taking account of the very resource base it all depends upon.
Gail, is this new sort of economics your solution to this too? How would you make sure that the boundaries are not just used as an excuse for politicians not to do anything?
Well, I can't really talk about the government policy decision makers, but all I can say is that when we show the planetary boundaries framework to executives at many levels of an organization, including the C-suite, it helps to clarify the issue of sustainability. You know, in many corporate reports, you'll see this throwaway line, sustainability is a journey. But, you know, executives don't like a fuzzy journey. They actually like key performance indicators. They like data. They like dashboards. They like thresholds. They're very comfortable with having nine. It's not that many. It actually helps to simplify things. And it brings a more understanding to the idea of company X is, you know, really working hard in one area, but it keeps hearing from environmentalists, well, there's still problems. The planetary boundaries thresholds help us explain why. Because, oh, well, we're not doing anything on nitrogen, phosphorus, or only a little, or, oh, we actually haven't done that much on biodiversity. So our experience in a very practical sense is that executives love this because it brings clarity. It helps to focus direction strategically and practically.
Let's finish by looking at the future just briefly. Johan, you've set a lot of challenges up through the planetary boundaries model. What are you doing next with these nine targets? Are they going somewhere new soon?
We're doing, in particular, three lines of advancing science. And one is just to tie up to the last part we discussed. That we are, for example, now looking at what do the planetary boundaries mean for world food production and for food industry in the world. And just to give you an example how concrete these things then translate, I mean, we all recognize we need to basically have a new green revolution in the world because we need to increase food production by 50%. You then pick out the six planetary boundaries that are directly relevant for food, which is, of course, water, land, nitrogen, phosphorus, biodiversity, climate, and air pollution. And you can get direct targets, quantifiable targets that can be used both for Unilever or for the World Bank when they're doing investments into research and development and policies at the national level, all the way to the African Green Revolution Alliance with regards to a transition to productive, sustainable intensification agriculture. So that's one line of research from our side. The second one is that we're right as we speak doing the Planted Boundary 2.0, which will be an update on the science. We're quantifying the two boundaries which we were not able to quantify, which is on chemicals and air pollution. And we're doing what I mentioned earlier, a twin definition on a global and a regional boundary for all of them that are relevant. But the third line of science, which is the most interesting one, is being inspired by the work of Kate and Oxfam on social human dimensions, address the issues of equity, of governance. How do we share the remaining ecological space on Earth in a world with 9 billion people having a right to well-being?
Well, no doubt looking forward to seeing all of those things. Thank you, everyone. That's all we have for this first Sustainable Business podcast. But the debate will continue online at guardian.co.uk/sustainable-business. My thanks, though, to Gail Whiteman, Johan Rockström and Kate Raworth. I'm Alok Jha, and this podcast was produced by Celeste Hicks.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.